Diamond Plaza's finest liquor store.
Oh yeah, there it is.
It says, unbelievable world beers, fine wines, and superior spirits. All right.
Hi, are you open?
Do you have Bumbu rum?
Bumbu rum.
I have no idea what that is.
Go and check the thing. Bumbu rum. Yes. Yes, it is. Look at them.
Street and turn left.
Oh, you will see that shop. Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, thank you.
You need to Google it. Never heard of it.
The mysterious. Oh, how about this shop?
Yeah.
Oh, this is what you're doing.
Yeah, okay.
Hello.
Hi. Oh.
Okay, I see.
Do you see it?
Oh, that looks nice. Do you have this, Bumbu rum?
No Bumbu rum. Is there another liquor shop in here besides those guys?
Have you checked here?
Yeah, we just did.
Yeah, we did what to come to.
What are these? Is this Kenyan?
I think so.
Kenyan liquor. No, Indian.
This rum is actually, it's very bad looking, but it's very tasty.
Jamaican
Hello.
Express.
Okay, we are coming.
Rarely have I failed so completely, so quickly.
No, we just have so much to do. No time.
No time to, yeah. For the great Bumbu search.
So Joshua Obaga and I struck out at Diamond Plaza in Nairobi, looking for the Bumbu rum that this week's guest had asked me to bring over. But Muthoni Ndonga, better known as Muthoni Drummer Queen, is not the type to leave things to chance. She smartly was in possession of her own remnant stash of Bumbu, and we're just going to plow through that. That we are drinking it and talking in her Nairobi apartment just before she heads off to shoot yet another music video is, well, just a sign of the hustle. Muthoni is not just an entertainer and entrepreneur, but also, as she puts it, a cultural alchemist who takes various parts of the African and global cool zeitgeist and repackages it into a song or a show or a concert series or a video, whatever the moment calls for, as long as it is, in her words, grounded in dopeness. We recorded all of this here in the before COVID times, but I remember distinctly how in the middle of my nearly nonstop 3 years of travel, and what a world that was, I remember that Nairobi stood out. It moved me. The people, the food, the chewable narcotics, the tremendous vibrational energy of the streets, and that thing that Muthoni calls a bias for doing. Nairobi gets it done. I was won over. When we all have gotten the jab and are ready to move around this planet again, come and get some Nairobi for yourself if you can. This is Nathan Thornburg, and from Roads and Kingdoms, you're listening to The Trip, drinking with exceptional people around the world.
Hey, there we are.
Yeah, there we are.
All right. And you sound good.
Yeah.
And it's quiet, and it's beautiful, and it's Sunday, and you've poured me this amazing rum, which I want you to tell me a little bit about, but cheers.
Thanks.
Well, thank you. Oh, my goodness. It's like a spiced, flavored, what is happening here? What's going on in my mouth here?
Yeah, it's like spicy and sweet.
Yeah.
Also, it's the first rum I ever drank that you could drink without like a mixer.
Just straight
with some ice.
Which is what we're doing here.
Absolutely.
And this is a Kenyan rum.
It's not a Kenyan rum. I wish it was, no.
Oh.
I actually think Bumbu is, I say American, I could be very wrong.
Oh yeah,
we should ask Google.
Should we ask Google? We're allowed to do that on this show.
Bumbu, B-U-M-B-U.
I mean, first off, I could just say it again and again. It makes it good, feels good on the tongue, you know. Bumbu, Bumbu rum. It sounds like Afro-Caribbean word or something.
Yeah.
All right, it is made from sugar cane, such as byproducts like molasses. Wait, what are we talking about? This took me to the Wikipedia page for rum, which is like, that's very basic. Come on now. Come on, I got to be better at Googling. It is an exquisite,
mm-hmm.
all natural.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this is what we're talking about. 5 gold medals in 2 years from the LA International Spirits Competition.
Mm-hmm.
All right, yes, we're here. We're drinking it. We know it's good. Tell me where it's from. Boom, boom. Barbados.
Voila.
This is Bajan rum. Oh, I'm liking that. All right. We were just talking about how I'm from the islands, and
yeah,
and there, here you are serving me some island rum. All right.
That's good, no?
Oh, it's super good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, that explains my utter failure to find it in stores. This is a special import.
Yeah, it is a special import. There's a company that brings it into Nairobi. My friend runs some marketing experiential stuff.
Oh, yeah.
So he's the one who gave it to me. So I actually buy it off of him. So.
And you know, what the terrible thing is, of course, is my failure at two different liquor stores to get a bottle of Mumu means that we are killing your bottle.
Which no, it's cool.
I just feel like it's a party foul on a Sunday. Come into this woman's home and drink her last Bumbu rum.
No, it's cool. I'm sure I can get some more.
All right. Well, I wish you luck in that. This is an excellent rum.
Cool.
So we have you here. It's funny because I've been talking to people about who, you know, everybody's like, all right, well, who are you talking to in Nairobi? And no matter who I'm talking to, whether it's the, you know, LGBT activist or the cook or the writer, everybody's very fired up that I'm talking to you. They're like, oh, Mutari. So let's start there. Like, what are you doing to these people? Explain what I've been experiencing when using your name around town.
Yeah. Maybe. That's funny. I wonder. Maybe it's because my work, our work with the festivals or with the music, it intersects. It's an intersection point for so many different people,
yeah,
so many groups of creatives and just humans at large. So I'm not necessarily surprised that people are like, oh, you're talking to Madhwani, because, yeah, I think because of the work that we do, I just kind of end up knowing.
You're in a lot of communities.
Yeah, I'm in a lot of spaces. I know a lot of people.
How would you describe the work that you do?
If I had to, I think my work is cultural alchemy. Yeah, so my thing is to take culture ideas and just kind of throw them into a pot and make a kind of, stew, sauce,
yeah,
kind of. And finding the right things and pairing the right people, right ideas, right opportunities. Being able to know what's cool, what's authentic,
yeah,
what's popping, what's culture.
And is that like a moment-to-moment thing? Like you feel like, okay, this is what Nairobi needs right now. Or is this is what the moment is now, and that kind of like, and then you reinvent it and kind of work a different thing 6 months later?
Yeah. I think a little bit of both. I think it's knowing what is needed and then doing the work to,
yeah,
make, you know, good vibes and access to music and the arts at,
yeah,
large.
Well, that's funny because in this whole description, that's the first time you said music, right? I mean, you are the drummer queen, but there's all of this other stuff that you,
yeah,
put first when you think about what you're doing.
Yeah, I think for me, the music is personal expression. But it's also a means, right? The music allows me to be in spaces, in people's minds, in people's homes, in people's like headspace. And it helps me compose an audience, right? The people who are attracted to the music that I make come. And so we're able sort of to co-create this, can I say, community,
yeah,
with one another.
Yeah, you could say community. So it's like your song is a plaza. Like you've just like put,
yeah,
it out there and you,
yeah,
you get a sense of the kind of people who are going to fill that,
absolutely,
plaza.
Absolutely. The ones who gravitate to it. And then there's people who don't necessarily care about the music, but they like the idea of a person who is creating. So whether I'm creating music or creating festivals or creating experiences. So I think that there's some people who are interested in me because of, you know, I have a bias for doing, so my doingness.
Oh my God, that is an amazing phrase. What a thing to aspire to have a bias for doing, right? No, that's true, because I've gone through periods in my life where I had a bias for couches or something, you know, like, and then there are other times you were feeling it, but to stay on top of that, and that's interesting because it's really, Nairobi feels to me, And I'm sure this is in part because of, you know, the channels that I came into here, but it feels like a small creative town where people generally know each other.
Yeah.
And it's generally connected. How do you reach outside of that class? I mean, obviously you're making art and you're making, you know, you're making things that inspire people who think hard about creativity, but what are your like mass appeal goals? And is that even something that you think about?
Mm. When you say mass appeal goals, what do you mean?
Just like, just becoming, you know, like a musician who resonates, you know,
yeah,
all around the country, yeah, all around the continent,
yeah,
I don't, you know,
yeah,
outside of the continent.
Yeah.
Like.
Yeah. So I like to think of myself as an international African. So I traveled a lot for music. I see things. I have friends or acquaintances from many places in the world, and I think that I have an above average understanding of, you know, cultural nuances and differences and all the stuff that happens when you're curious when traveling. But I am an African. I'm concerned with the development of Africa. Africa for Africans. I think African leadership, African enterprise, African cultural icons. So my mass appeal, I would, the music that I make, I think of it as like global cool.
Global cool.
It's just like some cool shit that could, that just resonates globally, that,
yeah,
you know, it's grounded in dopeness.
Oh man, you were just dropping. I'm starting to see it now. But from the bias for doing and being grounded in dopeness, I feel like you are like a slogan machine.
I know. I'm so like, sorry. And they're not the best slogans.
They're amazing. I'm like ready. I'm ready to go. I don't know how I can become an international African, but I am fired up to do it.
You're fired up to being global cool. I think you probably
okay.
are.
All right. All right. We'll stick to that aspiration. But that's right. And you know, it's interesting because that's got to be, I mean, this is something that we obviously know a lot about in the States, like our culture. I mean, huge parts of our culture, you know, extending now into television and Hollywood, it's all African American. I mean, that's yeah. the base for it.
Yeah.
So it's interesting to think about you coming, you know, from Africa into those spaces, into Europe, which, you know, has its own kind of Afro-European culture. Like what is that interaction? Like, how do you contribute? What's the message when you collaborate with like African American or Afro-European artists? Mm. How does that like?
Yeah. So I think for me, it's become increasingly important that there is a, can I say like a sonic signature, stuff in the music that is abundantly clear, that is not from, say, European culture
yeah.
or American culture. I think that that's really important because it makes people curious about like, what is that and where is it from? And we can, you know, have a nice conversation about Kenya.
Right.
Right. And to be like, yeah, there's no such thing as an African sound. There's
very specific sounds.
Very many African
yeah.
specific sounds.
Yeah.
So I think that's becoming more and more important for me. Now with the collaborations that we're aspiring to get, I think it's going to be even more crucial. I think that there is a clear, understanding that there's like a mother sound almost in the thing, right? That is very primal and very home, that's from here.
Mm.
And I think that the cool thing is we already have, with the music we've made like sometimes small references or small experimentations
yeah.
with different sounds from Kenya, and it's always worked, but we haven't necessarily leaned in all the way with that. I'd like to, in the new project that we're working on now, there's, you know, a more consciousness around drawing from that.
A specific
sort of root.
And what is like the Kenyan sound?
There's no such thing.
Okay. how granular do we have to go? Is it like a West Nairobi, East Nairobi
no.
sound? Is it
So what happened? Kenya was invented by colonialists in like 1895, right? This didn't exist. This was just like a bunch of communities, nation states, everybody with their own language and their own sort of cultural vibes and music. And then the British came and said, okay, now you guys are one, right?
Great.
So interrupting.
Yeah.
What would have been the natural evolution.
Right, and dividing the Luo right in half. And
exactly,
right,
yeah, the Maasai and the Somali. And so then having all these people mushed up as one, and then taking Kiswahili and saying, there is this now national identity, which there is this Kenya and this language that everybody speaks, you know, which is cool. Kiswahili was invented by like Bantus on the coast with their interaction with the Arabs over many, many years. So it's quite cool because it's, I would say it's the first remix language.
Yeah. Well, somebody, we were getting to a description of like a slightly evil Esperanto because it's like slave trade kind of made it happen, you know, between Arabs and the, and the Bantu on the coast. But it is, right, it's like this very global language almost.
And so then there's that one sense of identity, which is at that this kind of national level. Everybody speaks sort of this language. And it, because it is nothing, it is everything. Does that make any sense?
Right.
It doesn't draw from any sort of ethnic root. It's literally just like an invented ideology. There's this one language that makes everybody the same because everybody is the same and now we are one.
If you're going to be stuck inside these borders, that's probably a good thing to have.
So it's at that level. And then maybe it's built on like some national values, right? We value X, Y, Z. So that's one level of Kenya. And then you have the other level of Kenya, which is very ethnic, very fragmented. Everybody has their ethnic root and everybody has their language and everybody has their own kind of music. So I'd say the national... because the identities are always at this sort of two levels, the sound always, the sonically, it's also at like two levels. At the national language, almost all Kenyans understand this sound called Benga.
Yeah, I've seen the big like Benga retrospective billboards on the highway and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, everybody understands Benga Rumba in one way or another because that music sort of really played at that level. And that's also the level where there's a lot of Western influence.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have the ethnic level where it's like really, there is like, the ethnic level has like ethnic pop, which picks elements of Rumba or Benga.
Yeah.
And then you just have like ethnic music, traditional music from the different communities.
Yeah. Which so is about instrumentation and rhythm.
Instrumentation, rhythm.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's also like the key, the scale.
Yeah.
There's different scales in different communities. So this kind of like ethnic root music. Yeah. So I think if you were to try and say what could be a Kenyan sound, I think you would either have to draw from the ethnic root, pick an ethnic root and then like add your layers or find a way to make Rumba Benga, then add your layers, right?
Yeah.
These are kind of the only two ways
right.
we can have. And so we don't necessarily have a Kenyan sound.
Introducing Bluehost Cloud. Ultra-fast WordPress hosting with 100% uptime. Want a website with unmatched power, speed, and control? Of course you do. And now you can have all three with Bluehost Cloud, the new web hosting plan from Bluehost. With 100% uptime and incredibly speedy load times, your WordPress websites will be dependable and lightning fast on a global scale. Plus, your sites can handle even the biggest traffic spikes without going down or lagging. And with Bluehost Cloud, you get 24/7 WordPress priority support, meaning you're connected to WordPress experts anytime you need them. Not to mention, you automatically get daily backups and world-class security. So, what are you waiting for? Get Bluehost Cloud today by visiting Bluehost.com. That's Bluehost.com.
So when you're talking about this new project, and what is it? Are you allowed to talk about it?
Yeah, it's a new album that we're working on. We went into residency in February and did the first part. And we're looking to finalize a project by August. So what I did is I worked with a bunch of traditional instrumentalists.
Oh, no
so
shit.
So I could get like a lot of different ethnic root music.
So you're taking Route 1.
So like Luo music, Luya music, coastal drums, and like really finding that and then saying, how do we add some layers on top of this? Because I think that's really interesting.
Yeah.
And it doesn't always succeed, right? Sometimes like based on pattern, it doesn't always necessarily succeed.
Yeah.
But I think we're getting somewhere.
Yeah. Well, you would know you're right in the middle of it. You're close to the end, huh?
Yeah, we're close to the end. Now we need a bunch of hits more. We have like 2 hits on the project and we need like 3 more.
That's the limit you need. If I get 5 hits, then I'll be ready.
5 hits in the project, I think it's going to be quite cool.
It's so fascinating, though, knowing that Kenya is a thing that was kind of put on you, and yet your job, you're seeing part of your project as sort of defining Kenyan music or like having Kenyan influence in your, it's like, it does put everybody here in this odd position of defending something they never asked for in the first place.
Yeah.
I mean, this is long ago, but it's also not long ago, right? I mean, everybody's still just like we in the States, like we're still living with the repercussions of, all of our different colonialisms. And it's interesting to have to do the hard work of building a national identity in your music.
Yeah. I'd like to try. I mean, I don't know that I'm going to really succeed, but I think the principle has been established and there's a real curiosity. I work with these 2 Swiss producers, and for them, this has been really challenging. Like, find that and use that as a base, and getting used to that and what it can then, produce.
Well, those motherfuckers speak a different language in every valley. So the Swiss, of all the Europeans, I would guess the Swiss might have some sort of sense of this is the Urdi Kantan sound. And sorry, I shouldn't call them motherfuckers. The Swiss. Lovely people, pretty neutral, but lovely otherwise.
Pretty neutral people, yeah. So.
So you brought them in to help
to see if we can make something together. And not all of that is going to be, I mean, like you have music like, because some of our music has real rooting in like dancehall reggae. Mm. Those are just like, in my view, we've internalized reggae so much in this side of the world. It doesn't even feel in any way foreign. It feels almost, it's very instinctive. We really like reggae on this side of the world.
We had a game at Dago's last night. Count the Marleys. There are so many Marleys wall. It's just like 1,000 Marleys. And then they have a picture of Marley that's just a mosaic of little tiny pictures of Marley. So you really get into the thousands, but yeah, so I'd spent a lot of time in Cuba. And, I'd done stuff with people like DJ Higue or Kelvis Ochoa, people who are like, very, Kelvis plays this suku music, which is like just as African as you can get, kind of on the Isle of Pines. And DJ Higue is like very into Afrofuturism. And it's really interesting to see because, I think although they've spent some time in different parts of Africa, it's still sort of an undifferentiated Afro-Cuban sound. And it's not like Kenyan. Like suku is, I think the most they can say is like, well, this is kind of like a West African sound, which is, so there's that kind of trade in both directions that favors messiness, and favors kind of mixture, criollo, like that mixing thing. But again, it's such a value, like that I imagine if, as you are saying, as an international African, you are kind of saying, well, here's a very specific context and music at a very high level that this is Kenyan. Mm-hmm. And now you can, put that, remix that or like put it into your hip hop beats or like figure out ways to work with it. And so you'll know that this is Kenyan and not just like Afro something.
And for me, that's good. That's really the bane of my existence now. I really want to have global, international, commercial success. And I want it to be very clear. When you hear it, I want there to be like where is that from?
Yeah.
And I want to be able to say, that's Kenya. And because I think just sonically, that's not an idea that has necessarily been represented at that level.
Right.
And I recognize it's an experiment, and by no means am I going to be the one who is able to speak definitively on behalf of every Kenyan who has ever lived. I recognize this is not where I'm going to meet my success.
But I get it. I mean, here we are having Googled our Bumbu Rum and finding out that it's from Barbados. Yeah. You know who else is from Barbados?
Correct.
It's Rihanna, right? Yeah. And like, who knows that in the States? Yeah. Like, I was down there a couple of years ago, and obviously they love her, as she's this incredible star, but there is a sense of like on the flip side, on the American side, people couldn't tell you where they think she's from Houston, right? I mean, and it's kind of like, I wonder, I don't know if there's anything she can do about that. It's not like she's playing, Bajan traditional music.
No.
But there is like, yeah, That's right. That's a different flavor of success where people recognize like, oh shit, Kenya is the hotness, right?
Yeah. And I wonder, because, you know, you have people like Fela who introduced literally a sound, right? So Afrobeat is Fela. And then, you know, then you have like the follow-ups and say King Sunny Ade, and you have this sort of this really developed sound that is so hyper-specific to that time. And it's so rich. It's been able to create enough room for then the Afrobeats movement that has come, you know. And it would be really, I'd be very happy if in, you know, in this, my lifetime soon, I was able to progress the conversation enough that more and more Kenyan, you know, producers or whatever could like look into the idea of what could be this thing, you know, this whatever it is, this Kenyan whatever, what is it?
Is that a question of self-belief, or is it a question of the outside world believing in you? Like, or is it both?
I think it's, I think that because the question has been asked so many times, right? And I guess for us, we've become content with the idea that there is no such a thing as a Kenyan. If it's a Kenyan who's made it, it's a Kenyan song. I firmly believe in this idea, by the way. I also believe that if a Kenyan made it, then it's Kenyan.
Right, okay.
Right, and not needing to have like any further qualification, right? So if, what is a Kenyan sound? Whatever Kenyan musicians are making, that is a Kenyan
God
sound.
God bless you, that's great. Yeah, right. No, that's a legitimate way of also taking some of the pressure off of
absolutely
like representing and some like platonic ideal of Kenyanness in everything you
exactly
do.
Exactly. And I think that there is much to be gained by the fact that, in fact, we don't really have anything, because it always leaves the room for interpretation and, you know, what could happen. So my personal wanting to go down this direction, I think, is for me to be able to contribute an idea to the table about what it could be. And then, you know, if it sticks, if it makes people feel more interested in their Kenyan-ness and like more curious about their Kenyan-ness, then I think it's already made half the job. The other half would be then to create a big enough curiosity that other artists, peers or older or younger, are willing to like listen and either challenge the concept I brought to the table or add a layer of interpretation, right? Then we start to see, like, I don't know, 20, 30 years from now, this kind of thing forming. And you see it all the time, like, ATL had Krunk. Like, we woke up one day and found this thing called Krunk, right? DC had Go-Go for years. So I think it's completely...
It's doable.
I think it's doable.
Yeah.
But I'm not trying to be the one who's like, this is now Kenya. No, it'll never... The experiment will never end for as long as we're still asking what does it mean to be Kenyan and what is Kenya. I don't think that the sonic expression will end. And then also, I don't think that it can. We have 42, at least, ethnic communities. So even if you are only like taking from... an album would probably have like 12, 13 songs, you know.
I believe I probably would not want to listen to this album that has 42 different distinct musical styles.
Exactly. So I guess there's space for experimentation.
Right, especially now that Indian Kenyans are the 44th tribe or something.
Yeah, like, exactly.
You'd have to then include a lot of like, you know, Bhangra music or, you know, like who knows how far afield you'd have to go to be like totally inclusive. But I like that idea, essentially, you know, looking back in history, finding that there were moments, whether it's from Motown or, you know, Krunk or whatever, where it's like, it's not just one artist, but it's like a lot of people in conversation.
Exactly.
Who suddenly, as, you know, as a group are like kind of rolling down the hill and are then identifiable as a thing, as a sound.
Yeah.
So it's not your burden alone.
No.
But you're out there like trying to be one part of
the
catalyst, I guess. Yeah.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
How do you view the process of videos? Because I think a couple of guys who were working at the hotel where I was staying were like, oh, the videos. like really excited about that part of you, which I always find interesting because I find it such a different, I mean, they're now kind of like, you have to do both and you have to do both really well as a musical artist. Mm. But how do you look at like moving pictures as part of your creative output? Yeah.
So for me, quite honestly, I didn't listen to music growing up. I watched music growing up. We didn't really have like a big radio system. My parents were moderately into music, so we didn't have like records on records. I mean, my dad had like a bunch of records, but it wasn't like, I'd say he liked music averagely, the way an average person likes music.
Don't overdo it now.
No,
just like, a moderation.
So we ended up watching TV.
Yeah.
And on the TV, there would be like some American music shows. So we watched music videos.
Right.
And so from quite young in my mind, it's almost like music and music videos have almost always been intertwined.
Right. Fascinating.
Yeah. And so music videos, I think for me, are an excellent opportunity to add a layer of understanding to a song.
Yeah.
And to just like bring a level of, I want to say people see and then they believe, right? Even if they hear and it's good, now we see. I also just like the way music consumers are. It's like you hear a song and then you go straight onto, you know, you hear it, let's say on Spotify or whatever, and then you go straight to YouTube.
Right.
To look for the videos.
And they want to see like, what is the world that like? I just heard?
Exactly. Yeah.
Right. And maybe that way you can get all 42 ethnic groups on the screen at one point. You know, they don't have to do anything. It's just be like a big We Are the World setup.
Yeah, we are all the Kenyans.
So how do you, I mean, when you shoot videos, do you take control of the direction? Or is it very much about collaborating, like knowing that this video artist or this cinematographer has some vibe that you really like?
Yeah, I think more that... when I have been the director myself, I haven't been met with the most amount of success. I think I'm too literal.
Oh, yeah?
I think I'm too literal.
Well, that's interesting. So as the lyrics go, you're like kind of framing the scene.
Yeah, I'm too literal with the way I see it. So I don't think I'm like, I have good ideas. I have like thoughts. I think that it should be whatever. I can contribute like overall thoughts, but like the putting together of it, I've really learned that it's much better to trust a cinematographer that you love, who you know their work is solid, to do it, and then you'll end up with what you wanted to see.
I know. Yeah. It's not
my natural language, actually. Videos is... I know a good one when I see it.
Yeah,
it's like art, no? But it's not necessarily my natural language, right? But what is cool is when the director makes space to listen to your like vision about what it was and what's important for you and what takes, and then they can take that and flesh that out into something. Yeah.
So you're a producer. That's kind of the role. I mean, I somehow we fell into doing production with Bourdain, and like, you know, it's amazing to just be able to speak something into existence and then have really talented people just like kind of go out there and do it in ways that you didn't even think about. And then, you know, and then you get to be attached to it. And it's really like, it just feels like multiplication, not addition.
Absolutely.
And that's a wonderful, it's a wonderful place to be, especially if you like, you know, I'm just lacking these technical, you know, awesomenesses that, that a lot of these shooters have.
Yeah.
So you're shooting a video soon?
Yeah, now, in fact. Yeah, we were shooting all of yesterday, and like in a couple of minutes, we're going to go to continue shooting.
That's right. That's your next call. So what's the vibe? What are you shooting in?
Yeah,
it's for the album that's coming out.
This
is one of your two hits.
One of the two hits, exactly. And now everyone's panicking because they're like, we need at least four more.
Wait, you just said it was at least three more.
Yeah, but
you're raising the number.
Yeah, I know, because you know you always need one for just in case something, right?
Just a spare hit lying around.
Yeah, you just need like a spare hit. You know, you just have to be prepared for when Will.i.am is like, cool, can I work on something? You have to be ready with something that he can listen to immediately and be like, cool.
Yeah, that's a hit.
Can I put this out?
Yeah, got you. All right, keep that in your pocket. So where are you shooting? What are you shooting for this?
So today we're shooting in a place about like an hour's drive out. We did a bit yesterday at the Railways Museum and on a rooftop. And the song It's called African Fever, I think. Okay. That's the working title.
All right, all right. We'll see where it lands, but yeah,
yeah,
I like it.
Yeah, and I think it's just about this. I say in the song, like the things that we used to dream about, like being able to play to like huge audiences, having music that is being heard, having hits. Now that's like everyday reality, right? And if you know, and I guess it's a sense of fulfillment, taking the minute to be like, oh, this is pretty cool, actually.
Yeah.
Like the thing that we were working for many years, it is now at the point where it's starting to come through, right? The beginning of the manifestation, and
right,
that feels good. And I think the thing is, we spend a lot of time always like chasing or searching or having goals, trying to meet goals, etc. And I don't often stop to be like, oh, let's just kind of savor this moment right here.
You have a bias for doing, not a bias for savoring.
No.
but no, I
so
get
this
it.
This is one of those.
But that's interesting too, because at least in the working title, it's African Fever. It's not Muthoni Fever.
No.
Right? You're not like, damn, I made it. Aren't I amazing?
No.
But it's more like, this is something that we can speak into existence, like all of our dreams.
And I think that's actually what's happening now for a lot of like really cool Africans, right? Across the board, fashion designers, architects, producers of music, of movies, DJs. It's really cool to see the rise and rise of the international African people who are just like having these really global careers, but are continental Africans. They live here, they work here, and the perspective that they take out into the world, you know, is very African, even if, you know, Africa is not a country. There are some things that as Africans we can agree are pretty African.
right. That's fascinating, because I think we, you know, in general, there's conversations about the African century to come, you know, like there's I mean, demographically and so on, there's plenty of reason for feeling like it'll just be a bigger and bigger and player, especially if, you know, after it gets over the tremendous hangover that, I should say my kind have left on this continent, right?
So trauma.
Yeah. I mean, it's like I mean, we see it everywhere. Like that doesn't go away in a day.
No.
But I think in talking about it, even people who are believers are always looking for those signs, you know, those like signs that, okay, that's actually happening. It's time that it's ready. And it's hard to know, because you're kind of talking about a zeitgeist and like what is cool and like how, what percentage of that DNA then comes from, you know, Africa as a continent. So I don't know. Maybe it's because I'm in Africa right now. I'm really feeling this, though, you know?
Yeah.
But it's true in the States, too. There's just, like, I think it's actually happening.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if that's wishful thinking or what, but it feels that way.
It feels that way. I think, at least, I'd say the part where, you know, there's a question, I think there's a question about what the individual can do. And so to the extent that the individual's effort and... So it's really cool to see the momentum of the individual effort and how far Africans are getting just based on the individual effort, right?
Yeah.
Like you said, in sports or in music or in film or in fashion.
Yeah.
You can see the effort of the individual and how far it's going. I think that it's definitely not going to be enough if there's no institutional changes. There has to also be structural change to allow.
Yeah. Well, and until...
To facilitate, really, right? Because so...
I think until Black Africans have the right to fail upward, like white people,
absolutely.
You know, like if it has to be like an extraordinary effort from an extraordinary individual every time somebody kind of breaks through, well, that's not fair. Because, you know, speaking from personal experience, I don't want to call myself out, but like there's a different set of expectations and levels in the you know. The highs and the lows are just calibrated differently for non-Black people. I mean, that's just how the world is set up right now.
Yeah.
And maybe it's changing. I mean, that's the thing that has to.
I don't think it's changing yet. But I think that there's enough. I think that there's enough noise, that there's already like acknowledgement. There's a lot more people who are now like, oh, shit, I didn't even know that was a thing. we're finally talking about like exceptionalism, and it's like, oh, okay, so we don't, you know, why do we have to be exceptional to get exactly the same things that other people who are pretty average get?
Yeah.
So I think that because there's an increase in awareness of that, there is starting to be, I think, a new way of thinking. I don't know that way of thinking is at any structural level. I mean, like, yesterday, for example, I'm going to say a simple, stupid example. We were shooting one of the scenes of the video at the rooftop of a building. And these guys make like some really cool jackets. They're called Nairobi Apparel, and they have like a tattoo parlor. So we were shooting there earlier, and then we went onto the rooftop. And we had permission from like the caretaker to like use the rooftop. And this guy who's also on the rooftop comes out and sees this like young people on the rooftop, and they look good, and there's like a guy who's like trying to set up for a music video, and immediately he went into like, who allowed you to shoot here? You people are here making millions, why aren't we being paid? I should have been paid for this. And I just felt so sad for this guy. It's like, you already just like, I don't know, I want to say, if there was ever a thing like African culture, he was already like on the wrong side of that.
Right. Yeah.
You know, as an older person talking to younger people about like him getting paid for things.
Right.
Like, this is, and then that you would be upset that we are making millions as young people. You would think that would be the thing to be like, this is dope, or you guys are shooting a video that's kind of cool, what else do you need? You would think that that's the thing that would be happening.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's a little bit of the crab pot syndrome too, where it's like just kind of always trying to claw down.
To claw down. But yeah. I really felt extremely sad because to me, I was like, that's a generational thing. That the generation of Kenyans and, you know, in many other places, people feel this, many other parts of Africa, but the generation above us is so linear in their thinking and so small, but they're the ones who have all sort of, can I say, like, they're the ones in policy and in government and in like, in at least political leadership and a lot of corporate leadership as well.
And so, yeah, I mean, not to excuse them, but they've been through some shit.
I get that, which is why you would think that they would want it to be easier and better and faster for the next generation.
What is wrong with humans? Because it's true. It's like, you know, it's like those cycles of abuse, you know, where people are kind of like, this happened to me.
Yeah.
Let it happen to these guys too.
Yeah.
I'm sorry that happened, because that's a moment when you want to be like bright and up and like really feeling African fever, right? This is not a time to be brought down by...
No, but a guy who's mad that we're being creative.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to ask him so many things. Like, would you have rather that we were all like draggies in a corner? Like, if it's, assume your worst case scenario, whatever your worst case scenario is, your worst case scenario is with a bunch of young people who are making millions. Like,
right.
why is that? Why
young
is,
people today, they're so successful.
Yeah, exactly.
It makes me mad.
And that's how we feel all the time. And that's what I'm saying, you know, right now, all the rise of, you know, the international African is really because of the individual effort and the kindness of strangers, right? But it's not yet at a structural level. There's no governments here who are like, right, maybe with the exception of Rwanda, I would say, there isn't really any leadership on this continent. Sierra Leone, the president of Sierra Leone is super cool.
In another way, I guess the response to somebody trying to bring your shoot down and in the process has got to be like, all right, well, this is exactly why I need to make this song.
Yeah. Right?
Exactly why it's got to be a hit and I need another four is like,
absolutely.
There's a message that needs to be heard. So I'm going to let you go and go shoot the rest of this video and do the things that you were put on this earth to do. I cannot thank you enough for the Boom Boom Rum.
Thanks.
And for the time. Thank you, Mathoni, drummer queen.
Absolutely.
The Trip from Roads and Kingdoms is hosted by me, Nathan Thornburg. Emily Marinoff was our producer on this episode. Taffy Mokinyadze, our consulting producer. Alexa Van Sickle is our editor. Music by Dan the Automator. Episode illustration by Daisy D. Show artwork by Adele Rodriguez. Executive producers are me and Matt Goulding, also of Roads and Kingdoms. Next week, fortified wines, tiny grilled fish, and one last song of a past summer from Porto, the second largest city in Portugal. I'm starting there with my old friend, the photojournalist Eduardo Leal, who grew up in Porto and wound up covering the whole world, in war and at peace. I can't wait to see him again, cannot wait to have you along for the ride. We will meet you there.